In this demonstration, we're going to be taking a look at a demo site that we've created to show some of the features of CardSpace and to explain how it works under the hood. We'll first of all begin by examining the CardSpace experience, just walking through the experience of signing on so that you can understand what the user's experience is. And then we'll take a look at the inner workings of the website and show you just how easy it is to add CardSpace support to an existing site or to a new site that you might be developing. So let's go and explore the Windows CardSpace experience. You'll notice that I'm running Windows Vista. I could have run this demo on Windows XP or Windows 2003 server by downloading the .NET Framework 3.0, which contains Windows CardSpace. In this particular case, however, I chose for the easier setup option and chose to use Vista. The other prerequisite that you must have to run CardSpace is a web browser that supports Windows CardSpace. Today, that means Internet Explorer 7 or Firefox version 2 or above with a downloadable add-on. We'll take a look at the Firefox version in just a moment. So first of all, let's go ahead and just walk through the CardSpace experience, imagining the experience of signing into a website somewhere on the Internet. Here I'm being asked to submit a card. I'm not being asked to present a username or password that I can quite frankly rarely remember on the various sites I visit. So I click the button to submit my information card, and up pops CardSpace. Here you can see that I have a selection of cards available, but CardSpace has remembered that I've entered this card or submitted the information represented by this card to this site before. So I'm going to go ahead and resend this information card data to the website to identify myself so they can log me in. I do that just by hitting the send button. CardSpace then took the information represented by that card, bundled it up into a block of XML, encrypted it so that the website could decrypt it, and then signed the message to make sure that the recipient of the token can determine whether they've seen this message before and prevent replay attacks, and can also check that the message hasn't been tampered with. Here you can see the full XML message that was sent across the wire to the website, and its encrypted payload. And here, just below, we can see the decrypted contents of that token. So that's a very simple walkthrough of the user experience. Let's take another look now in a bit more detail at what's actually going on while we work with CardSpace. Now, to demonstrate the details behind the CardSpace experience, let's just also sign into this site using Firefox. I mentioned earlier that you can download an extension for Firefox 2.0 right now. In future, CardSpace support will be built into Firefox 3. So let's go ahead and hit the submit button that we saw before. You'll notice that once again, up pops CardSpace, showing me the list of cards that I have registered. You'll also notice that the desktop underneath CardSpace appears to have been turned to gray. This is a visual cue that CardSpace is running in a separate, private desktop from your logged-in session. This means that if you've managed to somehow pick up a piece of malware or a keystroke logger or some spyware or such like, that spyware and so on is now running on your desktop, not in this private CardSpace desktop. This helps shield you from many common forms of intrusion attack and malware, but obviously doesn't protect you from everything. So CardSpace is just part of the layered defense system that is now present in Windows via Windows Defender, various antivirus and anti-spyware packages that you can download and install, and also presents this important new feature that helps protect the CardSpace environment from intrusion and attack. Now, you'll notice that I have a selection of cards. Some of these cards are lit up in color, meaning that they are applicable and appropriate to be submitted to this particular site. Some of these cards are grayed out, and that's because these cards don't meet the demands that the website has that are specified in terms of the information that I must present in order to sign in. So how do I know what information the website is asking for? If I take a look at any of the cards and double-click the card, I can see an asterisk list of fields here being requested by the website. They're asking for first name, last name, email address, and also a site-specific, or otherwise called a PPID, a personal private identifier. This personal private identifier is generated by CardSpace and is cryptographically unique for this card at this particular site. This means if I took the same card and presented that card to a different site, the different site will get a different PPID, a different unique ID for that card. This helps prevent collusion behind the scenes and prevents organizations from sharing user databases and extruding more information about me than I might have been willing to release in the first place. It also helps prevent replay attack, because any site that manages to convince me to submit my card to them won't have the PPID for the real site, and so can't turn around and replay that data to the real site itself. Now, you'll also notice that in this particular card, my man pointing a finger card, there's also a lock symbol in the top right hand corner. This is a visual cue that this card is protected with a PIN, and I must enter a PIN in order to unlock that card before it can be submitted. Now, this is an important feature, in particular for people who happen to share a machine with others, like your family, your spouse, friends, neighbors, and colleagues as well. This allows you to optionally PIN protect individual cards to make sure that other people other than you can't use them. Now, we mentioned earlier that these cards are grayed out. Let's take this card here and take a look at it. And we can see that it's been grayed out because there's no email address specified. Now, I could fix that by editing the card, because this is a self-issued card or a personal card, a card that I've created manually on my machine, storing the information here locally on my machine as well. And the information included is of telephone book quality. It's the kind of stuff that you can get from public records or telephone books, so it's not overtly sensitive. Now, I could enter, for example, fred@fred.com, and when I save this card and return to the main screen, we can see the card is now lit up in color because it is appropriate for submission to this site, i.e. it meets the site's requirements. If I remove the email address once more and hit save and return to my card list, you can see it's grayed out again. Now, this other card with the Microsoft logo on it is a managed card issued to me by Microsoft, who are willing to assert that they know who I am and here's a unique ID for this card at the site that I'm trying to submit this information to. You'll notice, however, there's no data about the PPID. There's no actual value there. That's because with managed cards, the data is stored by the identity provider within their systems, not locally on my machine. That's because in the case of managed cards, identity providers get to issue cards representing whatever information they're willing to assert about the user. For example, if I was to obtain a bank from my employer, they might say what my first name and last name are, what position I hold, perhaps what my spending limit might be, or what my authorization level might be. If I obtain a managed card from a bank, they might specify what my account number is. If I obtain a managed card from a driver's license authority, they might specify what vehicles I'm licensed to drive and what my current driving record is. So each identity provider gets to determine essentially the schema of the claims they're willing to return. They also get to brand the card themselves. So if I edit this card, I can change its name, but I can't change the picture behind it. And that's a very important feature for both branding experience as well as for security. Because one of the benefits of this user experience is that the cards that I have listed here in front of me with the particular bitmaps that are behind them are all very specific to me, just like the contents of your wallet are very specific to you. And if you pick up someone's identical leather wallet and open it up, you can almost instantaneously recognize that that's not your wallet, because the cards in it are different from yours and the pictures of family members, etc., are different from yours. So the visual nature of the CardSpace user experience, with lots of different cards with different bitmaps behind them, is an added benefit of CardSpace. CardSpace has a very, very minimal programmable surface area, which doesn't allow or doesn't provide any functionality to allow external applications to query or enumerate the cards that you have in your store and what bitmaps are behind them. So it's going to be extremely difficult for someone who wants to simulate the card space experience if, for example, trying to fish you. They won't be able to enumerate what cards you have very easily, and so therefore they're not going to be able to synthesize this UI. And if they present a UI that's different to you, you'll suddenly stop and say, hang on, this isn't my card space. Now, let's just come back to the submission mechanism. So to submit the card, I select the card that I'm interested in, and once again you'll notice that CardSpace has sorted the cards that I've previously submitted to this site to the top of the list, helping me remember which of my potentially many cards I'm going to submit to this site. And instead of hitting send as I did in the previous example, I'm now going to hit preview. And what that does is allows us to see what information is going to be sent to the site if I submit this data. You can also see when and where I last submitted this card. So, in this particular case, I'm going to be submitting my name, my email address, and this particular unique ID. And yes, I'm happy to do that, so I can hit send. Alternatively, if I'm not happy, I can click the back button and go back to my card list and choose another card. And this again is a very, very important feature of CardSpace, in that the user is now under complete control of the exchange of their own personal identity information. This is unlike many existing authentication mechanisms out there on the web, where I, for example, enter a username and password into one site's identity system, and they then log me in to a third-party site. I don't get control over what information is exchanged in that model. With the CardSpace model, I, the user, have control and can check what information is going to be transmitted before the data actually makes it across the wire. I'm happy to let this data go in this particular case, so I hit send. Now, CardSpace has taken the data represented by that card. It's encrypted it so that the recipient is the only person that can decrypt that message, and then signed it and timestamped it to make sure it can't be replayed and to make sure that the message can't be tampered with, and then delivered it via HTTP to the website. We can see here some of the headers attached to the message itself, and if we scroll along, we can see the encrypted contents of the message itself. Now, in order to read that information, we of course have to decrypt it. And because the message content was encrypted with the public key of the website itself, the website has the private key and can therefore decrypt the contents and enumerate them on the screen here, as you can see. Now, notice this isn't the content of the card. The card remains on my machine, but the information represented by the card was stuffed into a token and pushed across the wire to the recipient website here. Here is also the personal private identifier, the unique ID for this card at this site. And if this site then uses that key essentially to identify me within their backend system, they now have a way to tie this incoming card to a set of profile data about me and show me my shopping cart or show me my account page or whatever it is that they need to do. So there, with just a few mouse clicks and with a little bit of explanation, we've seen how we can use Windows Card Space to submit cryptographically strong identity tokens, allowing us to identify ourselves to websites that we visit in a far easier and far safer way than we currently do by entering usernames and passwords. So let's now maybe go and take a look at the code behind this site. So let's go and take a look at the implementation of this site. Minimize Firefox and open up Visual Studio. Here we can see the site only actually has two web pages. One is the default.aspx, which is the main website that we get presented with when we see the Submit Information Card button on the screen. We also have a Process Token page, which is the page that handles the incoming token submitted by CardSpace and does all the magic to validate that message and to rip out the contents and display them on the screen. If we take a look at the implementation of default.aspx, we can see that it's all standard HTML, nothing particularly exciting in there, until we look a little bit more deeply and we notice this object tag. This object tag is the mechanism whereby when you click the button on the screen, this object tag gets sent back to the user's browser, and the object tag specifies what the website is asking the user to present in forms of an information token in order for the website to allow the user in. Now, in this particular case, the object token is asking for an Application X information card MIME type called XML token with an ID, and we're asking for a SAML v11 token to be presented. The website is also asking for the token to contain the details of a self-issued card and for these particular fields within the self-issued card. As we could see earlier on when we were looking at CardSpace itself, CardSpace knew what the required fields were from the website, because it grayed out one of the cards because it didn't have an email address. How did CardSpace know that the website wanted an email address? Here's how. Here we can see the list of given name, surname, email address, and personal private identifier, the fields that the website needs from the user in order to let the user in. So just by submitting back to the user's browser via a forms post the information presented here in this block of XML, this is essentially the magic that spins up Windows CardSpace on the user's machine. The user then goes ahead and selects a token, or selects a card, clicks submit to submit the token, and that token is then presented back to the website. And it's handled by the process token page. Now the process token page here, as you can see, doesn't really contain a very great deal. There's the skeleton of a table, but if we look at the actual code behind, that's where the magic takes place. And once again, you can see there's actually very little code here. What happens is when the page loads, the page extracts from the incoming HTTP request the XML token item, which is essentially the encrypted block of text that we saw displayed in the text box at the top of the browser page. What we do here is just set the contents of that text box to the encrypted token itself. And then what we do is we construct this token class. This is the token helper class, which is implemented within this token processor helper file, which we downloaded from the cardspace.netfx3.com community website. This is really where all the magic takes place. And what this token class does is cracks open the message, checks that the message hasn't been tampered with, checks all the signatures and so on, and then also decrypts the body of the message itself. All we then need to do is to get the list of claims that the token has decrypted for us and display them. And in this particular case, we just pass in the claim set to the display claims method, which just iterates through each of the claims, displaying the claim's value and the claim's name. And if we come back over here, let's just go once more through the demo. We submit the information card, we select the card, we hit submit, and with just three mouse clicks, we've now essentially authenticated ourselves to the website and allowed the website to crack open this cryptographically strong information token, uniquely identifying me from anyone else that turns up at the site. Again, this is a much, much safer, simpler experience than signing in with a username and password, and will hopefully mean that people will be far less susceptible to phishing and fraud attacks in the future. And as we can see from the code itself, if we just minimize the code that actually iterates through the claims, all the work that really was needed to be done could be contained in these two lines of code: to extract the token being presented, to decrypt that token, and then handle whatever the token contains. So with very, very little code at all, you can now go ahead and add CardSpace support to your site. Let's just take a very quick look at the CardSpace token processor. This, as I said, is where all the magic takes place, and there's quite a considerable amount of code in here. that does an awful lot of work in terms of validating signatures, performing the necessary cryptographic operations to accept self-issued cards or even managed cards. Because the only difference between a self-issued card and a managed card is essentially the values of the claims being returned. So it's the same technique, it's the same mechanism to decrypt and process a self-issued card as it is to decrypt and process a managed card. All you've got to do is handle a slightly different set of claims. So with that, we've come to the end, and hopefully we've given you a good taste of the CardSpace user experience and just how easy it could be for you to add CardSpace support to your site.